And then we have with us Joel Brind, who has been leading the battle to try to educate the American public that there is a very definite relationship between first trimester abortions and the incidence and the rising incidence of breast carcinoma. And, of course, he wrote an article that appeared in the Journal of Epidemiology and Epidemiological Community Health. I guess it was sometime late last year, where he did a meta-analysis of some 28 reports, but 23 reports which he felt were appropriate. And in, I believe, 18 of those, there seemed to be a very definite relationship between first trimester abortion and increased breast carcinoma. And, of course, immediately he was attacked by the American Medical Association, by the American Cancer Association. And then, of course, they very quickly got an article in the New England Journal of Medicine. Ordinarily, it takes a long time to get an article in, but this article somehow got in. It was out of Denmark. And it was supposedly to refute this entire idea, how terrible it is to suggest that the rising rates of breast carcinoma since we legalized abortion is somehow related to abortion. So, Dr. Brind, it's so good to have you with us this afternoon.
Good to be here. I wish I were there on the sunny slopes of Monterey Bay. Actually, I'm here in New York, but we're still in winter here.
Fine, and you are with the Baruch College in,
right.
A city university in New York City?
That's right.
All right, and you actually are in biology and you deal. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, my degree, actually, my doctorate is in basic medical sciences, which I got from New York University in biochemistry, physiology, and immunology. And most of my work has actually centered on that part of biochemistry which deals with hormones, which we call endocrinology. And I have been working largely with sex hormones and their influence on incidence of diseases such as breast cancer in women, such as prostate cancer in men for quite a number of years now. Actually, I've been working on sex hormones and human disease since my career started, really, in 1972. And on this particular issue of induced abortion and breast cancer, I just got started toward the end of 1992, having seen an article that seemed to suggest that pregnancy helped to protect a woman against breast cancer, but they didn't say that the pregnancy had to go to term. And in going back over the literature, I found that there was enough compelling evidence in the medical literature going back about half a century, actually, that indeed induced abortion, and by the way, first or even second trimester induced abortion, is associated with an increased risk of breast cancer. So we put together all the studies we could find. The 23 studies you referred to were reported variously in 28 different papers. We had to exclude about 30 different papers which confused the issue between spontaneous abortion and induced abortion or miscarriage. And the risk there is different. Miscarriages generally are not associated with increased risk. And we found this statistically significant increased risk emerged from all of these studies that have been published around the world since as far back as 1957. Black women, white women, Asian women, crosses geographic lines, ethnic lines, you name it. It seems to be quite a common denominator.
Well, now, why was it when you came out with this article, suddenly the American Cancer Society and the American Medical Association, both of which organizations you would assume were interested in saving people from cancer, why did they attack you? Why were you attacked by almost every major means of communication in America?
Well, it's politically incorrect. Of course, the prevailing dogma is that abortion is safe for women, safer, in fact, at least 10 times safer than childbirth. That is the prevailing dogma, but as you put it in your lead so aptly, that is the fantasy that is at the moment probably holding sway with a lot of people and certainly with the medical societies in this country. And the reality is, of course, that abortion is a lot more harmful to women, irrespective of one's views on abortion vis-a-vis the unborn. The abortion is definitely dangerous to women. If you, for example, just take the fact that abortion increases a woman's risk of breast cancer modestly, 30% to 50%, even that so-called modest increase in risk means a lot because abortion is so common and breast cancer is so common. So we're talking about a woman's risk of actually dying ultimately from the abortion due to breast cancer alone of being 100, 200, maybe 300 times greater than her risk of actually dying in childbirth. So the reality is that abortion is dangerous to women, and it is harmful to women, much more harmful than childbirth, which
in terms of
cancer risk is actually beneficial.
All right. Now, if a woman carries a child to term, you say that's a risk of perhaps one as far as her getting breast carcinoma. If a woman never has a child and never carries it to term, what happens then to her risk of getting breast carcinoma?
Well, in terms of determining risk, the group one uses a comparison, of course, makes a difference. If we take, for example, as an average woman, a woman who has one or two children and starts having children in her early 20s, then a woman who never has any children might be at approximately double the risk. A woman who, however, doesn't have any children because she has an abortion and then never has any children may be at a 50% risk beyond that.
And what happens if she has two or three abortions, as so many of our young women are being encouraged to have now rather than have children? What happens after two or three abortions? And I realize that wasn't the subject of your paper, but I'm sure you've looked at the statistics.
It's difficult to say. There are a couple of studies that show much larger risk with multiple abortions, and some don't show it. Once you get into multiple abortions, you're dealing with a lot fewer women in that category. And so it's hard to say for certain. And what we can say for certain at this point is the effect of having one or more abortions definitely increases risk significantly.
All right, fine. Shortly after you published your paper, suddenly we find this new paper in the New England Journal of Medicine. It's out of Denmark. Basically, I remember reading the editorial in the New York Times, just sort of gloating about the fact, and now we could lay this whole thing at rest. We had definitely proved there was no relationship between first trimester abortion and the increased rate of carcinoma. And how do you address that?
Well, it's very the politics is sort of very obvious here. Actually, I would say the professional group that was most directly identifiable in attacking our work is the National Cancer Institute, which is a branch of the federal government, Department of Health and Human Services. They're the ones who've been writing editorials for two or three years now, every time a study came out showing increased risk, denouncing the study. Now, when our study came out, since it came out in a British journal published by the British Medical Association, they couldn't actually come out with an editorial attacking that until another study came out of Holland last December, which actually showed an increased risk, but then decided that it was due to some kind of bias, and they actually trashed their own findings. And so the National Cancer Institute took the opportunity to write an editorial essentially denouncing our work. And then this, what came out of Denmark, think about it, was the lead story in the January 9th issue of the New England Journal of Medicine, top medical journal. The lead story, the lead editorial in that journal, hyping that study to the sky, and then the lead editorial in that day's New York Times and lots of other papers around the country. They came back and attacked us in the most high-profile way, which in a way was a testimony to how much impact our study had, because it did make quite a splash in the media around the world. The Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health, that is the British Medical Association itself, sent out a lot of press releases. So did Baruch College, so did Penn State College of Medicine, where my colleagues with whom I wrote the paper have their appointments. So it made quite an impact, and it just shows how panicked, really, the forces of politically correct medicine are, how they were very desperate, really, to put a stop to all this idea that there was a connection between induced abortion and breast cancer. And it was really quite extraordinary that they could take this study from Denmark, one study, a study based on prospective computerized data, which they then said was therefore invulnerable to bias, and that this found no risk, and therefore it settles the issue. Now, the interesting thing about this study is that the study was done completely wrong. You can take perfectly good data, which they had, and manipulate it in an entirely wrong way and come up with a politically correct result, which is what they did. And so it's quite interesting now to rebut them in various fora. And I was pleasantly surprised only yesterday to find that a letter that we had written in response to this study has been accepted for publication, although they are going to edit it, and it'll be interesting to see exactly how it comes out. But it is at least encouraging to see that that our side of the debate is not being completely silenced. I mean, they're coming out with the big guns, but ultimately there is a forum there. There is a debate going on. There are many people in the media, also mainstream media outlets such as the newspapers, the weekly news magazines, some of the TV networks, who are willing to listen and are willing to give us some airtime to explain what's really going on. So the issue has really progressed quite substantially over the last several months from where it had been for really a few years, where it was being ignored wholesale.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. I'd never even talked to you, but about 3 years ago, I went before the House of Delegates of the California Medical Association because I was the senior delegate for my county, and I presented much of your material that I was able to glean from all the articles that you'd accumulated, and some other people had them. And, you know, I just suggested that maybe doctors should be required to mention the possibility that women had an increased risk of breast carcinoma. Not that they got it, but just the possibility to a young woman before she had a first trimester abortion. And I was attacked. I was vilified. There was just no way that organized medicine was going to allow that information to be made available to young women. And yet we have informed consent for everything else. And yet when it came to abortion, anything that might possibly in any way discourage a young woman to have an abortion, pointing out that she might possibly be increasing her own health risk, and she might die as a direct result of taking the life of her unborn child. This was just not to be allowed, and there was nothing I could do to get past the hierarchy and the committees, and everything was done. They looked at all the material, and then, of course, just as you say, they just completely ignored it and trashed it. This is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Dr. Joel Brind of Baruch College at the City University of New York. And Dr. Brind, you mentioned you were going to be putting out a newsletter to keep people up to date with what's going on.
Yes,
would you like to tell them how to get hold of it?
Yeah, this battle to keep up the to get into the public consciousness with the connection between abortion and breast cancer is being fought on so many fronts that the only way to keep people informed on a regular basis is to put out a newsletter, which I'm beginning with a spring issue. Busy putting together the first issue, and if you would like to be a subscriber to the newsletter, you can send a check or money order for $45 made out to ABCQ Update. That's the Abortion Breast Cancer Quarterly Update, and the address is Post Office Box 3127, Poughkeepsie, New York. You can just abbreviate that POK, New York, and the zip is 12603.
All right, fine. That's ABCQ Update, Post Office Box 3127, Poughkeepsie, and you can write POK, New York, 12605. And if you
12603.
Didn't, 12603, thank you.
Right.
And if you didn't get that, you call Bob at the desk here, and he'll get that for you. Now, my daughter runs a crisis pregnancy clinic in the East, and she called me the other day, and she said, "Dad, what can you tell me about the relationship between first trimester abortion and breast carcinoma, and what about this new article in the New England Journal of Medicine?" And so I explained to her you were going to be on the program with us, and you would be able to explain what was basically wrong with that article. Didn't they basically sort of mix apples and oranges and take a lot of women before abortion was legalized in Holland? And then didn't have enough time there. Basically, what was wrong with the way they did the article?
Well, they did an awful lot of things that were wrong. One of the things they did was, this was actually done in Denmark.
Denmark,
okay. Previous study in Holland. But in the Danish study, they took computerized records of abortions, which began in 1973.
Okay.
And they imply in the study that abortion was only legalized in 1973, but actually it was legalized in 1939. And it's been legalized, liberalized, that is, many times since. And so you actually have many women who got abortions who are listed in the study as not having had abortions. In fact, we've been able to estimate quite accurately that there are 60,000 women in that study who are classified as not having had abortions, who actually had legal abortions that are on record, and I've gotten the records from the vital statistics of Denmark, before 1973. In fact, immediately before 1973, right before that last liberalization when the computer registry started in Denmark, the legal abortion rate in Denmark was higher than it is today. So it was not rare at the time. So all of these women in the study, who of course are misclassified, is a tremendous source of error. Then there are a lot of other women in the study who simply don't belong there. For example, they started the breast cancer registry in 1968, but abortions are only recorded from 1973. So there are all these cases, and we've calculated there are over 300 cases of breast cancer in the study, which were diagnosed before 1973, that is, before abortions were recorded. So they are, of course, recorded and on record and figured in the statistics as having breast cancer but no abortion, because the abortions are guaranteed not to have been recorded. Then, of course, there are the young women in the study, and they tout this as a very big study because it spans 1.5 million women, all those who were born between 1935 and 1978. But if you take the women who were born in the last 10 or 11 years of the study, between 1968 and 1978, none of them even reached the age of 25 by the end of the study in 1992. Some of them are still in their teens. So none of them are at risk for breast cancer, because women just don't get breast cancer before the age of 25, except once in a very great while. There are almost none of them. Yet there are, again, tens of thousands of those women who have had abortions, yet they're guaranteed not to have gotten breast cancer because they're just not old enough. So you see, there are all these women who are either misclassified in the study because the records of abortions are simply not there, even though the abortions were there, or because the women simply aren't old enough to have developed breast cancer as a result of their abortions. And those do not even cover the biggest mistake of the study. Because in order to cover those errors of including women who were too old on one hand and too old on the other hand and comparing them, they did a statistical adjustment.
Now these, is that what you mean, cooking the books? So?
This is well done. In terms of how much they're cooked, not in terms of the propriety of the technique. But what they did was they did an adjustment for age, which of course you would have to do, and that would usually make the numbers go up. Incidentally, usually in a study like this, they say, here is the crude relative risk, the raw calculation, and then here it is after our adjustment. Well, in this study, they have only one data table, which is unusual in and of itself. And the other thing that's unusual about it is, in this data table, they have two columns of statistics, but instead of being unadjusted and then adjusted, they have adjusted and then adjusted a little more. So the unadjusted statistic never shows, and the reason why it never shows, presumably, is that some reporters would catch on because the crude odds ratio, or the crude rate ratio, which is used as a relative risk indicator, is actually 1.44, even with all of the mismatched women and the fact that a lot of them don't belong in the study. Now, 1.44, even a lot of reporters know that means a 44% increased risk, doesn't it?
Right.
And so we wonder how they managed to adjust that down to a 1.00, which means exactly 0% increased risk. Well, there is this adjustment which they call a birth cohort adjustment, and it works like this. If you're comparing women who are born in different time periods, for example, they're comparing women who were born in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, then you have to take into account the fact that breast cancer incidence has changed during that time. So, for example, women who were born in the 1930s have a lower breast cancer risk even by the time they reach age 50 as women who were born in the 40s when they reach age 50, as women who were born in the 50s when they reach age 50, and so on, because the breast cancer risk through most of this century has been steadily rising. So in order to take out that source of error, are we still on?
Right, we are.
Okay, in order to remove that source of error, what they do is adjust for this so-called birth cohort effect. And what they've done then is subtract out the effect so that all these women are now on a level playing field. Only one problem. What is this effect due to? What other exposure which might contribute to breast cancer risk has changed in a similar manner through most of this century? Induced abortion. And if you get the statistics from the Cancer Society for breast cancer incidence, and if you get the statistics from the Danish national source of vital statistics, and you put them together, the abortion statistics and the breast cancer statistics, you find a striking fit of the two curves. You actually find not only do both of them not go up steadily, but there are patterns. For example, they go up a little bit more steeply for women who were born around 1930. And it turns out that there was a peak, a rise and fall in the abortion rate around 1955 when these women were in their mid-20s, which is when they were most exposed to induced abortion. Then, after a little bit of subsiding, both the abortion rate and the breast cancer rate rise rather steeply. And the breast cancer rate actually peaks for women who were born around 1950, that is, those who were exposed to the maximum abortion rate in the mid-70s. Which has since been dropping. So you see, one curve fits the other like the glove. I call it the bloody glove that fits. This is the induced abortion exposure and the breast cancer incidence rate. And what they've done is they have adjusted for this by blanking out the difference in breast cancer risk for women who were born during different time periods. So what they have done, the bottom line, is they have actually eliminated the very effect of the variable they were supposed to be looking for, and so they guaranteed their result of no increased risk.
That's not scientifically honest.
No, that is far from scientifically honest. I mean, it's amazing. As Janet Dehling, who is perhaps the best known epidemiologist in the United States, who has researched abortion and breast cancer, and she works at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Institute in Seattle, Washington, said she can't understand how this paper got through peer review. It must just be political. She was quoted in a Canadian newspaper. She didn't speak too much to the press about it, but her opinion of the study was made public. And there are a number of epidemiologists who agree. However, the political situation is a little bit difficult because, as I said before, it's the National Cancer Institute, which has been basically on the attack against any study, whether it's Dr. Dehling's or Dr. Brin's, my own, that shows that there is a connection between abortion and breast cancer. And the National Cancer Institute is, after all, the hand that feeds most cancer research in this country. So, of course, it's understandable that most researchers are reluctant to bite that hand. So this is part of the political situation that we're in now, and why there is not a huge chorus of honest and competent researchers talking to the press, appearing on TV, and saying how poorly done and how improperly done this Danish study is, and how the evidence really does show that there's an increased risk.
And of course, in the meantime, women are sitting on a time bomb because efforts to tell them the truth have been very, very effectively
blocked. That's right, but we just got to keep trying to get through because I'm always sustained and encouraged by the knowledge that the more I do talk about it openly, the more women do find out about it. And for every day that that women find out about this sooner, fewer of them will ultimately suffer the agony of breast cancer.
This is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Dr. Joel Grind, who is certainly the Paul Revere of the efforts to get the information out about the relation between first trimester abortion and breast carcinoma, because we're talking about the lives of an awful lot of young women who are going to die unnecessarily because they were never given the truth. And, of course, one of the big problems is how do you get this to be the accepted or standard of practice when every effort is made by the National Cancer Institute and the American Medical Association and the California Medical Association to conceal the truth from physicians. You know, one of the things, Dr. Brind, as I look at so many of these articles, most of these articles have not been printed in American medical journals, and I know many of my friends who are physicians, even obstetricians, when I've talked to them about this, it's never discussed at medical meetings. Why would that be?
Well, what we call political correctness.
But we're talking about science. We're talking about medicine. Does political correctness overshadow logic, concern about human life, concern about unnecessary cancer? Does political correctness actually influence what doctors are allowed to hear and see and ultimately to believe?
Sadly, it does in this country. It's not quite as bad in Europe, which is why for our comprehensive review and meta-analysis, which documents the worldwide evidence of increased risk of breast cancer with induced abortion, we deliberately set out to publish it in a journal published by the British Medical Association rather than the American Medical Association, because they are even-handed, and they treated it very fairly and very honestly, and published it without distorting its findings in any way.
Well, I know when we set out some years ago to actually get all of these articles, I wanted to read them myself. I don't take what anybody says, and so we actually went to the medical library and we got them to get all these articles. It cost me a fortune to get them. But suddenly I realized most of these, there were one or two in American medical journals, but most of these had by necessity been published in foreign medical journals because the American medical, various American medical journals just would not put them out.
Yes, the in fact, there was no American medical journal published any study on abortion and breast cancer which showed a statistically significant elevated risk until December of 1993, when the Journal of the National Medical Association, the African American Medical Association, published a study documenting a very substantially increased risk for African American women who had had induced abortion. And after that, the cat has been out of the bag a little bit, or the genie out of the bottle just a little bit, but with the studies that have been published, the National Cancer Institute has been very quick to follow with editorials that essentially discount the findings.
In fact, you mentioned in your review article, in your meta-analysis article, published by this British medical journal, that the in 1992, the New England Journal of Medicine had an extensive analysis of the causes of breast cancer, and they just completely failed to mention anything about the relationship between first trimester abortion and breast carcinoma. And then The Lancet, which is really basically a pretty good magazine overall, but suddenly they did a review and they too just forgot to mention that relationship.
Yes, that seems to have gotten politically correct recently. Their article, which ironically was actually supposed to be aimed at primary prevention, that's what they claimed to do. They published an article in September of 95 that failed to mention abortion as even a potential risk factor at all. That article was written by a couple of American scientists out of North Carolina. And so a little bit of this American disease of political correctness seems to have spread across the ocean. And that's, I guess that's not very encouraging, although what's happening now is a little bit more encouraging. Since we were able to get our paper published, it has, the issue has gotten, has made a quantum leap in credibility. So we're in a full-scale debate, and as I mentioned before, I've decided to up the ante a little bit by putting out a quarterly newsletter to keep a wide audience informed of what's going on a regular basis.
Are you doing much in the way of talk shows?
I had done a number of them through the years, here and there.
Because, you know, there is sort of a network of conservative talk programs, and I could mention your name to them, and you would reach an awful lot of people. I did a program this morning. I think there's probably 20 or 30 stations plus shortwave, and I'll tell you, we've been our fax hasn't stopped all day.
That would be most welcome, because I'll tell you, I just heard yesterday speaking with someone who had just done a seminar with some pro-life workers in New Jersey, and who mentioned abortion and breast cancer, and they said, "Oh, we thought this Danish study kind of put it all to rest."
Well, of course, that's
so there is a need certainly for me to reach a wider audience in a more regular and timely fashion, rather than kind of scrambling to answer a phone that rings off the hook whenever some study comes out.
Well, I'll tell you, since you are the person, really the point man for this whole thing, this whole issue, I'll do everything I can, and I'll certainly get in touch with you and get you the names of some of these programs, or I can have my publicist perhaps see if when he's calling around to get me on, if he can, because I talk on AIDS and population control, and I think that this is simply another aspect of this whole effort.
Oh, you are quite right, I'm sure.
And if, you know, if women don't know about the risk of breast carcinoma, they're going to have abortions, and that's wonderful for population control. Let's go to Mike here.
If they can get rid of a few of these young women and keep them from bearing children, kill off a few of them, that's so much the better for controlling world population.
Right. Let's go to Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Stan. I wonder if the doctor could explain the physiological aspects of all this. In other words, why does the abortion cause the breast cancer?
Excellent question. Most of the breast cancer risk factors that we know of, including some of the dietary ones, but certainly most of the reproductive ones, are associated with some form of excess exposure to the female hormone estrogen. So, for example, women who get their period earlier in life or go into menopause later in life or who have some substantial exposure to estrogens from other sources are known to be at increased risk of breast cancer. Now, what happens in an abortion is that you have the tremendous hormonal changes that happen early in a normal pregnancy. Estrogen is made in enormous amounts during early pregnancy, far more than it is in any non-pregnant state. So, for example, when a woman is, when she becomes pregnant, if the pregnancy is normal, her estrogens start to rise within a few days, measurably, after conception. And by the end of the first trimester, they're 20 times higher. In fact, they are 7 times higher than they are at even their peak level during a non-pregnant cycle. So they rise very quickly, and there is this tremendous exposure then to estrogens. And what estrogens do is they make the cells of the breast grow. These are cells which are basically not differentiated, relatively primitive, and vulnerable to become cancerous, and they are stimulated to grow by estrogens. Now, toward the end of a normal pregnancy, there are other hormones, and we still don't know exactly what they are yet, that make the these breast cells become differentiated, become cells which produce milk, cells which are no longer capable of growing and no longer capable of becoming cancerous. This is why having children is generally protective, generally known to lower the risk of breast cancer. But what happens in an abortion or in an induced abortion, that is a normal pregnancy, very high levels of estrogen early in the pregnancy, the pregnancy is terminated, and a woman is simply left with lots of extra vulnerable primitive cells in a growing state. And so this translates as a statistically measurable increased risk of breast cancer. It is not the same as what happens in a spontaneous abortion. Most spontaneous abortions or miscarriages also occur in the first trimester, but the reason they occur is mostly because a woman's ovaries are not producing normal high pregnancy amounts of estrogen and progesterone, the other sex hormone that's needed to maintain a pregnancy. So the very reason that the pregnancy aborts spontaneously is the same reason that that spontaneous abortion does not contribute to excess breast cancer risk, because she never really got a supranormal exposure to estrogen.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Dr. Joel Brind. We're talking about the relationship between first trimester abortion and breast carcinoma, and the politics behind this, which has really supplanted science and is being used basically to suppress what I believe is the truth, what Dr. Brind has very well demonstrated in his articles is the truth. And if you'd like to keep abreast of what's really happening here, you're working in the abortion field, you write and send a letter and a check for $45 to ABCQ Update, Post Office Box 3127, Poughkeepsie, but just put down P-O-K, New York, 12603. That's Poughkeepsie, New York, 12603. And if you didn't get that number, why, you can go ahead and give a call to our station, 464-8295, and ask Bob at the desk, and he'll have that for you. Now, our telephone number's here if you'd like to call in, if you have any question or comment, because this is a vitally important issue, I believe, and it is simply one more of these efforts that have been put in the way of anyone who wants to speak out and suggest that perhaps abortion is not only harming women psychologically, it is in some instances harming them physically, but of course it may very well influence their life in the future. The telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, Dr. Brin, what message would you like to leave with our listeners this afternoon?
Well, there's an overwhelming preponderance of worldwide evidence that shows that having an induced abortion increases a woman's risk of getting breast cancer. Despite what the politically correct powers that be would say about it, and what the latest research that's being touted from the top journals is claiming, that there is no such risk. In fact, when the databases that they are using for their own studies are properly analyzed, we see that they can't come up with any studies, with any data really, that contradicts this finding. It all supports the finding, whether the data is collected in advance, whether it's collected by women remembering their past history, whether it's collected in Europe or Asia or America or in black women or white women or Asian women. It turns up as the common denominator. Abortion, considering the long-term risk of breast cancer alone, having an abortion is more than 100 times more likely to result in a woman's death than having a baby is.
Now, when you say 100 times more likely, you're talking about breast carcinoma and then other risks associated with abortion?
No, I'm just speaking about breast cancer alone. And there are others, too. You see, breast cancer is such a common disease that if a woman, well, let's put it this way and simple, do a little bit of simple arithmetic.
Okay, fine.
The American Medical Association has said that it's 12 times safer for a woman to have an abortion than to have a baby. So they say that the risk of a woman dying from an abortion is only about 0.5 per 100,000. And a woman dying in childbirth is approximately 6 per 100,000. So you divide 6 by 0.5 and you get 12. So they say it's 12 times safer to have an abortion than to have a baby. Well, in terms of the risk of immediate death, it is obviously very, very safe in terms of either having an abortion or having a baby. But in terms of the long-term risk, consider breast cancer. If the lifetime risk of breast cancer is approximately 10%, and having an abortion raises it by a mere 30% to 13%, that's 3% or 3 per 100 more, which is 300,000, right? Which is, I'm sorry, 3,000 per 100,000, as opposed to something like 6 per 100,000. So you see, you have something like a 500 times greater risk of getting breast cancer, and then even if you assume something like a 75% cure rate, you still have more than 100 times greater chance of dying ultimately from the abortion due to breast cancer that you would get down the line.
I bet they really hate when you pull those statistics out.
Well, this is their trick, actually. I mean, it's very misleading, first of all, to use statistics like that and say, oh, it's so much more dangerous, when in fact it's, you know, a few per 100,000 makes virtually anything safe. You know, it's a vanishingly small risk of dying in childbirth or of dying from an abortion. But in fact, by using these relative numbers, you know, it's like paying somebody 10 cents an hour and saying, wow, we're going to give you 100% raise, you know. Now you're going to give them 20 cents an hour. They're still not going to be able to make a living.
Sure. Oh, but they keep playing these numbers games. And, of course, to me, as a physician, I think that the terrible tragedy is they've deprived physicians in America of knowledge of the truth. And they've done it through an organized effort, through medical journals, which are largely financed. One means or another, they can bring tremendous pressure through the great foundations and through the drug companies on these journals, and they just not telling the truth. And when I go to a medical meeting and nobody is allowed to speak from the podium on these issues, and I go to medical CMA meetings and have to put up with being personally trashed and personally attacked and vilified for daring to quote your statistics, I take this personally. But more than that, my concern is for the women who are dying unnecessarily. I think this brutal and cruel, inhumane, and one day I think the people who are responsible for this are going to have to stand before the bar of justice in this life or in the next one.
Oh, yes, I'm sure. That day will come as long as we don't yield to their attempts to silence us. I mean, as has been said so accurately, all it takes for the triumph of evil is for good men to stand around and do nothing.
Well, Dr. Brind, I want to thank you so much for your courage and for your standing up for what is right, and I hope we can call on you from time to time to keep us, I hope you won't mind the pun, but keep us abreast of what's going on, and we'll certainly look forward. When will that article be in your answer be in the New England Journal of Medicine?
I don't know yet. We just got news yesterday that it was accepted, and as I said, it was accepted in edited form. So presumably within the next month or two or three.
Well, I think it'll be very interesting to see what they have edited when they edit your newsletter. You know, you ordinarily think that when you write a letter, they'll publish your letter, but when they take the privilege of editing what you've said, they can certainly dilute the impact of what you've said.
Yeah, especially when we have taken great pains to stay under their word count, so they can't say they needed to edit it for length. But they're going to edit it nonetheless, and also it's likely to be published along with other letters and rebuttals, so that it may be a lone voice in a sea of others that say the opposite, which it doesn't make them right. You know, they try to make democracy out of science, you know.
Well, it's about time we got back to science, Dr. Brind.
Yeah, science needs to be scientific, not democratic.
Thank you so very much for being with us. May the Lord protect you, sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Well, that's Dr. Joel Brind, and this is a very, very courageous individual, because when you are working at a university, let me tell you that there is a tremendous emphasis on political correctness. You want to get grants, perhaps, from a foundation for your scientific work. What they can do is they can simply cut you off. They can cut you off from university grants. They can bring pressure to bear on the university to silence you. And if you get the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which we mentioned earlier, that book really goes into what happened to a college professor who had the courage to testify before a congressional committee, Dr. Hobbs, Professor Hobbs. And we've had his daughter on our program, Pamela Hobbs Hofricker. And Professor Hobbs was called in to the head of his university department and told, because he had dared to write a letter critical of the textbooks in America and to testify and reveal publicly what was really going on in education, he would never get a promotion. He would die an assistant professor, and that's exactly what happened. Over a period of some 30 years, he never got a promotion. And when he retired, in his 70s, he was still an assistant professor. He couldn't get grants. Everything is done to punish those people in America today who try to tell the truth. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got real problems. Women are dying, and they're dying unnecessarily. It's part of this spiritual battle. It's part of the population control movement. It's part of this battle between good and evil, and I hope that you'll want to join with us in this epic struggle to bring forth the truth about what's happening to the young women of America.
This following tape was obtained from Radio Liberty, but their mailing address is P.O. Box 13 in Santa Cruz, California, zip 95063.